Halloween night had a strange energy that year, even before anything actually went wrong. It was almost the way the air carried that sharp bite of fall, the way every porch light seemed dead, making more shadows than actual light. My little brother and sister were thrilled, faces painted, plastic pumpkins swinging from their arms, darting up the driveways with that sugar rush excitement only kids can muster up. Me, I was 19, way too old to be out here, and yet here I was, carrying the mantle of the responsible one. My mom had asked me to tag along since Dad was working late, and she didn't trust the neighborhood enough to send the kids off alone. I graduated that year, supposed to be figuring college or a job out, something. Instead, I was walking two kids in costumes down the streets that I'd trick-or-treated myself a decade earlier. Now, don't get me wrong, I love them, I'd do anything for them. But being 19 and stuck babysitting on Halloween night felt like one more reminder that I hadn't gotten my own life together yet. I felt my phone buzz in my pocket. A buddy of mine was close by, down one of the side streets. He had this little baggie for me, nothing major. I'd been looking forward to it all week. Just a quick handoff, maybe share a joint, nothing crazy, 5 minutes tops. The kids, they'll be fine. They have friends in their group, and every house on the street has a porch light glowing. Couldn't be any safer in my mind. Alright, you two stick to this block, okay? I said, crouching down to look them eye to eye. My sister's vampire fangs had slipped down to where she grinned, and my brother was busy adjusting the mask on his cheap Batman costume. Both of them nodded back at me. Don't go past that corner. I'll be right back. They didn't question it. Candy was calling. So they bolted off toward the next house, already comparing loot from their pumpkins. I slid down that side street, my steps quick to get this over with. I wanted nothing more than to just get baked. The noise of kids laughing, the porch chimes rattling, would grow quieter with each yard that I passed. The street lights thinned out here. The glow of jack-o'-lanterns gave way to more shadows. It was amazing how fast the atmosphere would shift when you left that main drag. Just one block over and it felt like another world completely. That itch in me, the need for something reckless, something just mine, pulled me along though. I felt guilty, sure, but I told myself again and again it's not that big of a deal. I'll be back before the kids will even notice. My mom will never know. Nobody would except me, my buddy, and the weed. I spotted my friend near the end of the lane, leaning up against the half-busted picket fence with his hoodie pulled up. The street was quiet, the sounds of crickets were filling in the gaps between our words. If I'd known what was waiting in the dark, just beyond that fence, I never would have gone there. He handed me that little baggie like it was nothing. We barely had enough time to laugh about sneaking it past my folks before the brush beside us erupted. We never really stood a chance. Something exploded out of the shadows. He came fast, really fast, like he'd been coiled there waiting for the moment to strike. 1 second it was just us, leaves rustling. The next there was a full-grown man barreling right into us. He didn't yell words, he screamed, an animal shriek that ripped through me worse than the impact of his actual body, and the man sounded absolutely terrified. My friend hit the dirt, the baggie flying. I staggered back, arms up instinctively, and then his weight slammed into me again. His face was now inches from mine. Eyes glassy, wild, pupils blown out wide, I couldn't even see the color around him. His mouth was foaming, spit sprang across my cheek as he clawed at my jacket. I shoved him, but he came back twice as strong. His fists weren't controlled punches, they were frantic. He scratched, he bit at the air like a rabid dog. My buddy scrambled up and grabbed the guy by the shoulders, trying to drag him back. For a second, I thought we'd actually get him off of me, but then the man twisted, swinging his elbows and catching my friend across the jaw, so hard that I heard his teeth clack. "What the fuck, man?" my buddy yelled, holding his face. I didn't waste time. I ran my shoulder into that guy's chest, shoving with everything I had. He stumbled backward into the brush, legs tangling up in the branches, and then, just like that, he was gone. He disappeared so quickly it was as if it never even happened. I stood there trying to catch my breath. My hands shook as I looked over at my friend. Blood was trickling from his split lip, his hoodie ripped at the shoulder. "What the hell was that?" he said. I couldn't answer because there wasn't an answer. Then, more sounds hit us, screams. Not the wild animal screaming of the man, but the terrified broken sound of children crying out. Shit, my brother, my sister. Every ounce of blood in me immediately turned to ice. Shit, I whispered. Then I was running. We tore down the lane, shoes pounding the asphalt. I could hear my buddy behind me swearing under his breath, but all I could think about was those screams. Every second counted. Every step felt like I wasn't fast enough. My friend and I were pretty decent-sized dudes, even at 19. It took both of us everything we had to get that dude off of us. My kid's siblings, they didn't stand a chance, and in my mind, they were already dead. We rounded the corner and I saw them, my siblings struggling in the man's grip. He had them both, arms like iron bands around their small bodies, dragging them toward a ditch that ran alongside the road. Their candy bags were overturned, chocolate bars and lollipops littering the ground. I screamed at him to let go, and the man didn't even turn his head. He snarled some kind of weird, awful sound, tightening his grip on my brother, dragging him down into the weeds. My sister clawed at his arms, her fangs clattering out of her mouth as he screamed out for me. I didn't think anymore, I just threw myself at him. We crashed into the ditch together. My shoulders screamed with pain as it hit the dirt, but adrenaline kept me moving. I grabbed fistfuls of filthy shirts, yanking him off my siblings, punching wildly. My friend was there too, swinging a rock that he picked up, smacking the guy across the back of the head. The man didn't stop. If anything, he got worse. He clawed at me, fingernails raking against my cheek. I felt the sting of blood, but I still didn't stop. I scrambled free, sobbing while my brother kicked the man in the ribs with the force of sheer panic. I told them to run, to get back, go. But they didn't. They hovered close, too terrified to leave me. The guy lunged again, teeth bared now, like he was gonna bite me. I ducked and drilled him in the ribs. It wasn't a lights-out hit or anything, but it was enough to check him. He stopped and actually gasped out loud, grabbing his stomach, acting human for a brief moment. For a brief moment, he stood there, chest heaving, eyes bulging, drool and blood slicking his chin. His body trembled like he couldn't contain the madness within it. And just like that, he bolted, tore off into the woods, crashing through the branches, his screams echoing long after he was gone. The silence that followed was worse than the actual fight. My siblings were clinging to me, both sobbing, their costumes torn, faces streaked with tears and dirt. My brother's voice cracked when he said, "He was gonna take us, he was gonna..." "Don't." I cut him off, pulling them both close. "He's gone, okay? I promise, you're okay now, you're okay." But the truth hit me, they weren't okay, I wasn't okay, none of us were, but I guess we were alive. We stood there in the wreckage, candy crushed under feet, the night around us heavy with the weight of what just took place. My friend was leaning up against a fence, pale, blood still seeping from his lip, muttering "Jesus Christ" over and over. "We're going home, now." "Yeah." "You got a phone?" "No, man." "All right, well, walk with us, let's stay together." Every step we took felt like we were walking through some kind of enemy territory, shadows pressing in on all sides. I kept my siblings in front of me, my buddy trailing behind. I didn't care about the weed, didn't care about my split cheek or the blood on my hands. All I cared about was getting them home. Every rustle of the leaves, every crack of a branch, I was sure he was coming back for us. My little brother clutched my hand so tight that it cut off my circulation. My sister walked on my other side, pressing tight against me, her plastic pumpkin swinging empty and broken. My buddy limped behind, spitting blood into the gutter, glancing over his shoulder every couple of steps. By the time my house came into view, I thought my heart was going to give out. We stumbled inside, slammed the door, and locked it twice. My brother started crying again, loud, heavy sobs. My sister wasn't much better. I tried to sound calm, but my voice shook when I said, "It's okay. We're home. You're safe." My parents' face went white when they saw us. My mom grabbed my sister, checking her over, while Dad got on the phone with the police. I kept saying the same thing to them. Some guy, he came out of nowhere. He tried to take them. But the words would get caught in my throat. The cops rolled up quick, and for once, sirens were the best sound I'd ever heard. They fanned out through the neighborhood, flashlights sweeping throughout the woods. Less than an hour later, they came back with him. I only caught a brief glimpse as they pushed him into the back of the cruiser. His shirt was torn, his arms were scratched to ribbons from all the brush, his face was streaked with blood and spit. He was still screaming, words jumbled, thrashing like some kind of man possessed. One of the officers shook his head and muttered, Hopped up on God knows what. Lucky you kids got away, huh? Lucky, that's what they called it, but luck didn't explain the way his eyes looked. Those black pits, void of reason. Luck didn't really explain how strong he'd been, or the way his shrieks cut through the night. That incident ended up defining the rest of the year. My siblings would sleep in our parents' bed for weeks. Me? I'd lie awake, staring up at the ceiling, hearing phantom footsteps outside, knowing now that monsters don't really have to wear masks on Halloween. They're just people. The Autumn Festival was definitely something our town lived for. One night a year when Main Street didn't feel like an actual ghost town. The courthouse steps glowed underneath orange string lights. The smell of cider hung in the air, and every shop front had pumpkins propped up in the windows, scarecrows left and right. You could almost trick yourself into thinking that we were part of some postcard perfect New England hamlet instead of a place where the Dairy Queen had gone under. Not once, but twice. I was stuck running the ring toss booth with three of my friends, our quote-unquote volunteer hours for National Honor Society. Mostly, it meant leaning up against the counter, heckling kids who couldn't throw a plastic ring over a 2-liter bottle. The prizes were dollar store junk, but the little ones went wild for them. I pretended to care because, well, that's what you do when you're 17 and don't want to look like a complete waste of space. The street was crowded, families with strollers, couples with styrofoam bowls of chili, the marching band hammering out some screechy version of Sweet Caroline. Booths and vendors lined up on both sides of the road. Cotton candy, face painting, raffle tickets for a quilt made by the Methodist ladies. Above it all, paper lanterns bobbed in the cool October wind. For a while, it was all background noise, the normal. And then I took notice of something. Two men, I guess they could have been kids, coming down the sidewalk in stiff lockstep. Both wore these crude paper mache masks, which were uncommon. Bulbous noses, lopsided grins, paint smeared on like clown makeup. At first, I assumed it had to be part of the festival, right? But nobody else's costume matched up with these guys. They stood out in a way that made me feel very uncomfortable. They were really tall as well, eerily so. Even from across the street where I stood, I could tell something was off about their arms, the way they swung low as hell, hands almost dangling to their knees. Their bodies were narrow, compressed, like somebody had stretched them from head to toe. I immediately felt the hair on my neck stand up, though I couldn't have told you why. When I told this story to a college friend, he told me that I experienced the uncanny valley effect. A woman and child passed by our booth right then, a mom with tired eyes holding her daughter's hand. The girl was carrying a candy apple bigger than her fist, red glaze catching the lamplight. She laughed, tugging at her mom to stop near the petting zoo. Normal, ordinary, safe. What the American experience is all about. The masked men slowed as they passed, their crude grins frozen on us now. Nobody else seemed to notice, just me standing there with the ring in my hand, my throat now gone dry. Something about them pressed on me, but my instincts were telling me to run. My buddy next to me laughed, said they looked like scarecrows on stilts, but I kept watching until they disappeared off into the crowd. Okay, I'm imagining things, it's Halloween, you know, whatever I'm doing, it's all in my head. Seeing them melt off with normal people was a huge relief. Actually, as it meant, well, they were probably normal, just leaning hard into the whole Halloween vibe, you know? The band took a break and the PA whined. People were drifting toward chili and cider, and we kept the rings moving and the line honest. The mother and the girl came back over. The girl's candy apple was half eaten. Red chips of sugar stuck to her fist. They crossed the alley between the barber shop and the antique place. A string of lights sagged above it. Half the bulbs were dead, so they were caught in some kind of darkness. Then, 10 steps behind them though, the two masked men were altering their course the same way, and they turned like a rolling tide. You see that? I asked. Hayes squinted. The sheriff stood by the dunk tank, towel over his shoulder, laughing with the volunteers. The mother glanced back, tightening her grip on the girl, and started to move faster. Then the tall guys went turbo and quickly closed the distance in a second. They flanked the girls and had them cornered before I knew it. I vaulted the booth and ran. I heard Hayes swear and then followed me. It smelled like candy and popcorn, which was comforting in the moment, but my body was running on pure adrenaline. It was this really weird contrast in the moment. They had the woman up against the wall, her arm across the child, one man leaning up close. When I got closer, the mask wasn't this sloppily crafted thing. It was smooth and chalky, hairline cracks spidering that painted grin. Not a single inch of skin was exposed anywhere, despite all the long, creepy limbs.
"Hey, back off,"
I said. They ignored me. The second man shifted so he could block the view. Hayes quickly grabbed up a folding chair and made like he was going to take a swing. One of the creeps turned around, but really only turning his head all the way around, almost like an owl would, and I couldn't believe what I was watching. Hayes then swung for real, wrestler, no-nonsense kid, and Flex fell from the mask like powder. Under it was the same paste, impacted now, like that's what his face was actually made of. I hooked the girls and hauled off. They folded into me, heavy with fear. The man's hand slid off the mother's shoulders and left this gray smear on her blouse. The guy blocking us snapped this long arm at Hayes and caught his wrist. I heard Hayes scream. The elbow flexed and hyperextended, whatever you call it, and Hayes was reeling with pain. I kicked the man's shin, and I mean, I fully blasted him. I heard him grunt and he let Hayes go. Then all of us retreated back to that ring toss booth. We pushed back into Maine. The crowd turned toward the noise now. A dad in a ball cap ran up with his hands balled up. A vendor grabbed this metal ladle like a weapon. Our principal then charged through, palms out, barking orders. Soon, a little posse of defenders had formed and started to circle those two guys. The tall men moved in these short, rapid steps that ate up the distance quickly. It was almost like watching crabs walk. One of them hit the deputy who had sprinted over from the dunk tank. He knocked the officer into the bushes and then jumped on top of him, blows raining down. I was closest. I started to move in, which ended up being a big mistake. The second tall man slapped me in the ribs unbelievably hard. I can't even explain how. Pain then flared up and I doubled over. It was almost like getting hit with a brick. Hayes hauled me up and dragged me back to the booth, and the others cut in and circled. The little girl was now sobbing, and the mother kept whispering to her that it's okay. People flooded the alley and froze when they saw the faces. They didn't have weapons or anything, it was just how creepy they looked up close. People were calling for them to freeze, hold up, stand down, but nothing was getting through to them. They resorted to threats and still didn't get any kind of response. A folding chair then arced through the air, pinged off one of the masked men. The guy didn't stumble an inch though, and they moved toward the park end of Maine where the pines stood tall and dark. A plastic perimeter fence ran the end of the line, and the men didn't jump it. They slipped through the gaps, just off the ground, bodies flattening and sliding. The fence didn't make a sound as they passed through it. A deputy fired off into the tree line, a shot that cracked and vanished into the pines. Then, noise rushed back. A generator stuttered. People screamed. We couldn't believe this idiot had just discharged a firearm, but after seeing that, I guess I don't really blame him. The mother sank to the curb, cradling her baby. Her blouse had that gray streak that flaked when she moved. The sheriff took everything in and barked out orders. Cones went up, police tape, radios. He tried drunks and masks, and it sounded weak. The deputy had gotten beaten down and didn't make eye contact with anybody. The statements had come in. They were tall and local. They weren't human. The mask wouldn't come off. Somebody swore they heard a laugh and it sounded robotic. Another said there'd been no sound at all when they came in. It had everybody on this men in black thing for a while. EMTs would ice Hayes' elbow and taped it up. They checked me and pressed a cold pack to my ribs. They wrapped the girl up in a foil blanket and coaxed her into sipping a bottle of water. She kept staring at the alley mouth, eyes blown wide like somebody had seen the other side of reality. By the time they got lights and bodies ready to search, the pines had already swallowed up any sign of them. The perimeter fence looked intact unless you peered up close, where a faint gray dust would paint some of the gaps. The sheriff closed the festival down early. Pack up, lock it down, post cars. He ordered more lights, officers, and volunteers. People would nod along, but it was really bizarre to watch. I could tell nobody really knew what to do, so they were primed to buy into anything. We left in groups, and I walked home with Hayes and some other kids. My ribs still kind of burn. Hayes kept rubbing his elbow as if checking whether the joint would hold up for him. At home, I scrubbed that grave from my palms until the water ran clean. There was a weird chalky smell everywhere that they touched me. To my knowledge, nobody ever saw them again. The town added patrols and light. The festival committee bought metal detectors. Nobody really knew why. The alley got a no loitering sign. People would try to call it a prank or a stunt, but I don't think it really stuck. Even the jokers walk straighter down the middle of the sidewalk now. Nobody wanted to get blamed for it. The sheriff stood in front of the courthouse steps the next morning, told the local paper it had been a couple of mass drunks, hopped up and looking for trouble. That was the official line, and he stuck to it. But everybody who had actually been there, the mothers clutching their kids, the dads who had charged in and been thrown aside, the high schoolers nursing their bruises, we all knew better. They seen the way those men moved, the way the masks cracked without coming off, the way the festival completely fell apart. Nobody said it out loud, but nobody bought the story either. And from then on, the festival committee approved floodlights at every corner. Volunteers would patrol, bag checks at the gates. Security tripled for every parade, every fair, and every market. And I guess, what else can you really do? We got invited to a costume party, and we were about to roll up late because my cape got caught in the seatbelt and because my partner, Tessa, insists on fixing the fake blood at every single red light. The house is a full-body shout, orange lights along the roofline, plastic gravestones stabbed into the lawn, a fog machine breathing out like a dragon. The base would dump to the driveway. Somewhere inside, somebody was yelling, "Time for a contest," and somebody else screams for fun. I am a lazy vampire, thrift store coat, dollar store fangs. Tessa is a glammed up witch, with glitter in her hair and boots that could kick down a door. We promised one another we'd only stay an hour, two max. We promised to ghost early if it got weird. We're not really the party goer type. At the door, a scarecrow with a beard breathes on us and slaps bracelets on our wrists. "Open bar," he says, which catches our attention. Inside, a hurricane, strobe lights, smoke, paper bats, the sweet rot of spilled punch. A guy in a rubber wolf head slowly dances with a nurse. Two pumpkins are arguing about Taylor Swift. A grim reaper is taking selfies with a fireman, both of them laughing hard enough to cry. And there are goblins everywhere for some reason. We float with the party, grab some plastic cups from a cauldron and sip. Sweet, strong, and utterly perfect. Friends materialize and then vanish again. I let the music stitch me off into the room. And Tessa leans into me and shouts, "You owe me for the glitter," then kisses my cheek, leaving a galaxy there. She looks sexy, and it's all for me. As I look around in the room, I notice three men near the back wall, almost in costumes. They were cheap black hoodies, dime store masks, the kind you just kind of grab at the register. Not Jason, not Ghostface, just those blank ones. They weren't really talking to anybody. I didn't see them dancing. They were just kind of watching. One of them tracks Tessa like he's counting her heartbeats. So I assume they're friends of friends, shy, baked, whatever, and I lift up my cup again. And now it tastes a little different, bitter under the sugar. My tongue goes numb along the edges, and a cold wire climbs up my spine. "Damn," Tessa says, making a face, but she drinks it anyway. I do too, because it's what you do, because we're here to relax and be dumb in a safe way. Somebody from across the room yells shots, and a tray appears, red liquid in glass syringes. People cheer. This room is a carnival ride that you can't get off of. I take one, and Tessa takes one. They burn cherry and medicine-like. The crowd howls. The scarecrow dings a triangle with a butter knife and declares the dance floor is now open. Fog rolls in, the strobe tightens off into this heartbeat. We send for another shot, and then the world tilts. It's really subtle at first, like the floor swells up under my shoes and then settles again. Then the corners of the room smear, voices start to pitch. The wolf's rubber head turns slowly, like a bad dream that's starting to buffer. Tessa blinks and then misses a step. "Hey," she says, but it sounds like it's in slow motion. A hand grazes my shoulder. One of the blank masks has now drifted up a lot closer. Up close, it's even stranger. There's no details, just eye holes and a slip for a mouth. He doesn't say anything or speak. He just nods at my cup, then at Tessa's, like he approves. I set the cup down. The air thins. Music turns into something acidic. and I can't tell if my heart is pounding or if the speakers are inside my ribs. Tessa squeezed my wrists hard and desperately. Her pupils are blown wide. "What is this?" she asked me, and the words reached me from the end of a long hallway. Across the room, another blank mask lifts up a pitcher, moves among the revelers, topping off cups with the host's easy confidence. People laugh. A girl dressed as an angel hiccups and sits down abruptly, feathers going limp. One by one, I see others hit the furniture in the same stupor. I look over at Tessa. Her smile is gone now. Mine evaporates quickly after it. We nod once, the oldest language there is. We aim for the stairs, for air, for distance, whatever. But the party surges and the fog breathes and the house keeps us in the swarm. The floor seems to be moving in swells. People slump mid-laugh, mid-dance, eyes glassy. A pirate collapses into a chair. A goblin crumbles to his knees. "Tessa," I whisper, and the name steadies me. Glitter streaks across her cheek like war paint. We fought towards the stairs. A blank mask then drifts by, pitcher in hand, tipping it into every glass. Nobody seems to be questioning it either. They cheer and then sway a little more. A hand then grabs my elbow. Wrong hand, weird grip. Latex smell, mint breath. A white mask inches from my face. The slit of a mouth speaks to me. "Party's rolling," he says, voice calm, bored almost. Tessa digs her nails into me and yanks me free. We push through the crowd with our heads down. The music slows until it almost is sludge. Somebody drops a bottle, and instead of laughter, the room exhales in a groan. Everybody is tripping, and nobody realizes it yet. On the stairs, Cleopatra sits down mumbling. The fog machine continues to scream. The strobe blinks impossibly fast. We quickly spot the half bath. Tessa reaches, and a masked man steps out, blocking with one hand. "Staff only." "It's a house," she snaps back, though her voice is syrup thick. His hands shift an inch, daring us, but we squeeze through anyway, slam the lock and press backs up against the thin wood. We can hear him pressing in from the other side, but the door holds, and we lean against it just to make sure. The bathroom is coffin small. The fan hums overhead, which is pretty useless. A pumpkin candle drowns in wax, a scent of fake cinnamon mixing with our sweat. "They dosed us," Tessa says, gripping the counter. "Something fast acting." She pinches her thigh, leaving crescents. "I'm here. I'm here." I clutch my phone trying to dial. My fingers don't seem to be working. I drop it. Tessa snatches it, but her hands shake too. She manages to get a hold of 911 and shoves it back at me. "Give them an address. We hold out. Just hold out."
911, what's your emergency?
3616 Oak Rome Drive, I croak out.
"What's your emergency?"
"Drugged." Tessa drops the phone. Something bumps the door. A polite knock with just two knuckles.
"Open up."
Tessa presses her palm to the lock.
"Go away."
I can tell the light is quickly going out of her. A laugh on the other side. No footsteps leaving, just breathing. Then the knob rattles, sharp and insistent. The latch holds, but I'm not sure for how long. "Tessa." I take her hand. It trembles as if she's having a seizure. "Keep quiet. We don't open." She nods. Her pupils are blown wide. "If they get in?" She jabs two fingers up at me. Throat, teeth. "We use whatever we got." The words stick to me. Eyes, throat, teeth. The hallway grows louder. Something being dragged outside. A muffled sob. A man's voice saying, "Shh, shh." A chair tips over and clatters, a bottle smashes. Laughter, endless. These people came here with a plan and it's going swimmingly for them. Tessa then presses her forehead to mine. "We're not going out there." "No, we're not." The door jumps as somebody throws a shoulder. The lock quivers. Tessa stifles a sob with her fist, but it just falls away limp. I press my heel hard up against the bottom, bracing as much as I can. We've lost almost all motor function from whatever they got us with. The seconds stretch on, then it stops, footsteps fade. More chaos explodes somewhere deeper in the house. Screams cut off midstream. We continue to lean into the walls, just breathing. Hey, we're okay, I tell her. We're okay. But we're not. We're gonna make it, okay? I say to her. At this point, my lips were completely numb, and I really couldn't move. We sat in silence, breath sinking, listening and listening. Time goes on. People cry, voices shout. Something heavy falls with a huge crash. I hear more broken glass and more laughter. Eyes, Tessa whispers again, our mantra now. Throat, teeth. Her hand never leaves mine. We hold our ground in that stifling bathroom, breath ragged, skin clammy. Every noise outside is a trigger. Shoes scuffing on wood, glass breaking, somebody pleading. The masked men moving throughout the house like wolves, organized, efficient, not drunk or sloppy, just working on the clock as it were. Tessa squeezes my hand until my knuckles crack. Don't let go, she whispers, and I don't. Then the air shifts, it's faint at first, and a hum beneath the chaos. Sirens, one, then more, cutting through the night. Blue strobes leak through the frosted bathroom window, pinging us now in flashes. The house reacts, feet thunder across the floor, and voices snap short commands. Go! Go! Get everything! Sharp and panicked, a crash as somebody throws something through a window, another scream, and this one is real, not dulled by any drugs. A doorknob rattles one last time, a palm slapped flat against the wood, sliding down with a groan of frustration, then it's gone. Don't move, I whisper, though neither of us could stand even if we tried. The front door then bursts open. I hear heavy footsteps and shouts from the police, telling them to get their hands up. A fight seems to unfold, running, cursing, bodies colliding, the dull rapport of somebody slamming something against drywall. Tessa presses her forehead onto my shoulders and mutters a prayer that's mostly just breath. Then a knock, this one loud and official.
Police! Anybody in there?
Yes, I manage, but I barely even get the words out. I fumble with the latch, my hands are stiff and half dead. The door opens to a wall of uniforms, flashlights cutting through the fog, guns still raised. Behind them, the house is wreckage. Costumes are shredded, furniture is overturned, unconscious bodies lying up in piles. They pull us out. Tessa clings to me, knees buckling. Officers then step past us, sweeping on, calling out. Somebody begins to sob, then everybody does. On the floor, one of the masks lie abandoned, white and plastic, blank, streaked with red, and I can't stop looking at it. It's not scary in the way it should be, it's terrifying because it's nothing. No expression, no humanity, just a void, an anonymous villain that I'll probably never see again. An EMT wraps a blanket around my shoulders. Another steadies Tessa, checking her pulse. I can't even answer their questions. I can only stare at that mask as they bag it for evidence. That Halloween was supposed to be a party. Instead, now it's a crime scene. No one ended up knowing those guys, but another party had been hit in a similar way that same night. Career criminals looking for some kind of come up. In the spirit of Halloween, gave them this perfect cover to come in and mess it all up. Too bad for us, as we did get drugged, robbed, and physically assaulted. But to my knowledge, no justice was ever served.